ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Tham Thalu Mulam Pradahantam Agnivad Gopala Shrunim Vittaram Jagat Guru Kacharda Sadyo Tirusha Shatam Vakas Kundena Antum Unar Abhyapadyata Tam Thalu Mulam Pradahantam Agnivad Gopala Shunam Vitaram Jagat Guru Chachcharda Sadyo Tirusha Shakshatam Bakas Tundena Hantum Punar Abhyapadyata Tam Thalu Mulam Pradahantam Agnivad Gopala Shunam Shunam Vitaram Jagat Guru Chachcharda Sadyo Tirusakshatam Bakas Tundena Hantum Punarabhyapadyata Tam Thalu Mulam Pradahantam Agnivad Gopala Shunam Vitaram Jagat Guru Chachcharda Sadyo Tirusakshatam Bakas Tundena Hantum Punarabhyapadyata Tam Krishna Thalu Mulam the root of the throat Pradahantam burning Agnivat like fire Gopala Shunam Krishna the son of a cowherd man Pitaram the father Jagat Guru of Lord Brahma. Chachcharda got out of his mouth. Sadya immediately. Atirusha with great anger. Akshatam without being hurt. Bakasura. Tundena with his sharp beak. Hantum to kill. Puna again. Abhyapadyata endeavor. Krishna, who is the father of Lord Brahma, but who was acting as the son of a cowherd man, became like fire, burning the root of the demon's throat. And the demon Bakasura immediately disgorged him. When the demon saw that Krishna, although having been swallowed, was unharmed, he immediately attacked Krishna again with his sharp beak. Purport. Although Krishna is always as soft as a lotus, within the throat of Bakasura he created a burning sensation of being hotter than fire. Although Krishna's whole body is sweeter than sugar candy, Bakasura tasted bitterness and therefore immediately vomited Krishna up. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.11, Ye yata mam prabhajyante tam stataiva bhajamyaham. When Krishna is accepted as an enemy, he becomes the most intolerable object for the non-devotee, who cannot tolerate Krishna within or without. Here this is shown by the example of Bakasura. So Krishna always reciprocates with the devotees. Whatever is their mood, whatever is their attitude, then he always deals with them according to how they deal with him. This is his principle, because this is rasa. Rasa means that there is exchange. So in this exchange, then it must be compatible, it must match, it must fit. Otherwise it's not actually rasa. Rasa means that the interaction must be compatible. If it's not compatible, then it doesn't fit, it doesn't work. So here then Krishna then says that he will respond to however someone deals with him. So if someone wants him to be, if someone's inimical towards him, then he will respond back as an enemy. Otherwise, if he doesn't respond back as an enemy, it's no fun. Right? It's only fun having someone as an enemy if they do things that make you more and more disturbed. Right? Means if they're nice to you, pleasant with you, like this, then still, even though they're nice and pleasant, in our own mind, we'll have to misconstrue this into something else. Oh, he's being nice for some political reason. Oh, he's doing this for that. We'll have to find some reason to maintain our inimicalness. Because otherwise, it doesn't match. It has to match. Otherwise, there's no taste. So if we are attached to anger, then we must taste that anger. So whatever is there, even if it's not bad, we will turn it around, make it into something bad. We have to. Otherwise, where will we get our taste? We can't. We can't find it. So being that taste is our purpose, then this is what we'll do. Otherwise, how we'll function, right? It means wherever we're attached, that's where we must endeavor. So if we're attached to anger, then we must taste that anger. There must always be something that makes us angry. Somebody does something, someone said something, we've heard something, anything, we must. It's important to us. It means to us, not to anyone else, but to us it is. So either the person reciprocates properly or they don't. So in the Vedic culture, then they would reciprocate properly. And modern is you don't know, right? You're not sure. So here we see Krishna being the source of culture, then he perfectly reciprocates. Someone wants to be Krishna's enemy, Krishna perfectly fulfills that, perfectly responds to that. Means they are trying to deal with him in a rough way, so then he responds in that way. He responds like that. So then the demons are satisfied, right? They have an enemy, and they can continue having an enemy. Otherwise, if it changes, it becomes a disturbance. Of course, in the demon's mind, is them having an enemy means they will get control of that enemy, they will defeat the enemy. So that aspect, then, Krishna doesn't necessarily respect. He reciprocates that some of the ideas in a fight, someone should get control and someone should be defeated, and someone should be brought under control. So here it just happens to be Krishna. He gets control and brings the other under control, rather than the demon brings Krishna under control. So this part, then, the demons don't necessarily appreciate. Right? Otherwise, there must be something. So here, then, he becomes the perfect reciprocation for this. So we see as Krishna also, he will reciprocate in our life. However we want to deal with him, he will reciprocate. That is his mood. At the same time, as if that reciprocation isn't of great standard, then he will work in such a way to improve that. Just like by killing the demons, they become improved. Right? They become elevated. They become purified. So then they can... Being killed by the Lord means to get elevated to the Brahman platform, so they can appreciate what is Brahman. So at least they'll appreciate the Lord. But more than that, no, because they've approached him in this anger, so they can't appreciate that affection. So here then, if in our life, then how we deal with Krishna, Krishna will reciprocate that perfectly. But he will also do it in such a way to elevate, to bring us up. So when they ask, well, why do that? Why not just leave well enough alone? What we see is because Krishna, it's his nature, because he is unlimited, he is ever expanding, therefore rasa also has to ever expand. It always has to be getting better. It can't stay the way it is. It's perfect, so it must get more perfect. And in this way, from moment to moment, be more and more perfect. Then it becomes nice. So Krishna then always expands it. So even with his most intimate associates, then he is always expanding this. So even though they have great affection for Krishna, and they're always happy to be with Krishna, Krishna has pastimes like this. Then they become disturbed, as we see. When the demons swallowed up Krishna, then all the cowherd men, the cowherd boys, then they became unconscious. Because Krishna is the most important thing to them. And so then he became swallowed by a demon, so that means a relationship with him becomes jeopardized, so then they become unconscious due to this separation. But from that, then it takes that happiness to another level. One is it goes deeper by the separation, and then after, when Krishna comes out and kills the demon and they get Krishna back, then it will increase again by their having come together with Krishna. And so that's constantly going on. They'll play all day, then in the evening Krishna will go home, they'll go to their home, so that separation it will increase. When they meet in the morning, it will increase again. Then by these pastimes it increases, so it's constantly increasing. So the same in our life, it will be like that. It's whatever it is, Krishna will reciprocate however we want him. You know, if we want to develop love for him, we want him to provide us with money, facility, fame, whatever it is, he will do that. But he'll do it in such a way to remove lower desires and bring us to a higher level. That's just the way he works. Because the idea is, being the ocean of rasa, there's no benefit being the ocean of rasa unless you're tasting an ocean of rasa. Right? It's no use having so much money if you can't spend any of it. Right? What's the use of being a millionaire if your allowance is 5 rupees a week? Right? It has no meaning. So like that, then one is able to, Krishna is able then to expand everything. So that is then what he's doing. So, So we see here is, even though all these perfections are there in his life, he's softer, more delicate than a rose. Because if you touch him with a rose petal, it will leave a mark. Right? Means yes, if you push, still it leaves no mark, right? You have to really push hard to leave a mark. But for Krishna, you just touch him with a flower petal, it will leave a mark. So delicate is the skin. But at the same time, as we see, you know, he's no wimp, right? So therefore, even though the demon catches him, he is not disturbed. The demon, though he is so soft, he finds him, you know, as burning as fire. You know, or even though he's so small, then Srinivarta finds him as heavier than the mountain. Whatever is the nature, then he has all these perfectly resolved in himself. He is the perfection of all qualities. And then of what is the best of those qualities, we see manifest in this form of Krishna. So as Krishna, this is the best of all possible forms. You cannot get a better, more perfect form. It is the most beautiful, it's the most wonderful. Any quality you'd want to attribute, then it has it to the most. And then this creates the sweetness of the exchanges in Vrindavan because of that interaction. Any questions on this? No? Yes.
Would it be feasible, like, say, one has a hard time becoming a devotee and he keeps it out of broken hopeless and becomes a demon and says to be a
Well, if you wanted to give up Krishna consciousness to become a big enough demon to get Krishna's attention, you'd have to be very determined, right? See, materialists get, you know, function well and get results because of their unalloyed focus and determination. They have 101% faith that if they get money, they get position, they get sense gratification, they are going to be happy. They have that complete faith. Therefore, they endeavor so hard. Right? And then the devotees, they have that complete faith that Krishna is the perfection. By serving Him, then whatever is to be gained and more will be gained. So these two don't have any problem. It's the ones in the middle. So if you can't make it as a devotee, you won't make it as a demon either. It means you have to be too focused to be a demon. You have to be cutthroat, right? How come you can't be doing it? You don't have the determination. You need to determine. You got to get out there, and you got to fight against the whole rest of the world, right? You want to sell your product. Everybody else wants to sell those, and you to not sell yours, right? So then, what are you going to do, right? The CEO of the company, when the competitor then comes out with a bad advertisement against him, then he goes, oh, well, what to do? Okay, I guess maybe I should just go retire to the Bahamas. You know, no. So the point is if you want to get anywhere, you have to have determination. So you might as well get some eternal benefit from it. You know? Because the other path is just too rough. It's just too difficult. So, since you have to focus anyway, might as well focus on Krishna. Since you have to be steady anyway, might as well do it for Krishna. It's anything in between, it's not happening. Right? I mean, it's just like if you think about it, any story, right, any theme in any literature, it's either about a very wealthy or prominent person, or a very poor person. Is there anything about just average, middle class, day-to-day, humdrum, ho-hum. Oh yeah, excuse me, on Saturday afternoon you can get programs about that. Yeah. But other than that, then even then, they can't just be life as normal. It has to be either in ecstasy or in misery, right? So that's the point. It means taste is at the extreme. Understand? The middle is neutral. Does that make some sense? So that's the whole point. That's rasa. It's because of that things that are different. That's what makes the taste. If the things are the same, you don't get much taste. You know? But if something's different, you get a taste. So that's the whole, that's how rasa works. Right? The senses have to meet the sense object. The object's different from the sense. But it's compatible. Therefore, the sense can perceive it. And therefore, there's rasa. Or the emotion. And it has to meet another compatible emotion, but different. Right? It means if you want to taste emotion, it has to be another person. So there's a difference. But the mood that they have must be compatible. Otherwise, it's not nice. You're happy there, I get completely bummed out. Then it doesn't work, you know? So many times you see, you can use it, you know, it's like, person's completely bummed out, and you just go on as if everything's perfectly fine. And they get really upset, you know? It's like, you're supposed to be upset also. You're supposed to, how can you be happy when I'm unhappy? And if you just keep at it, and like that, needling and poking, if it's not too bad, then they just crack up, and then they become okay. Right? But if it's really serious, you know, their pet goat died, or something, you know, really traumatic, then definitely, then it's being happy will not please them. They'll get even more upset because you don't understand the importance or the weight of the situation like that. So, like that, then it must be that. Does that make some sense? So, we see is that if you want to get anywhere anyway, you're going to have to be determined and focused and make an endeavor. So we've done it since time immemorial for material things. And here we are. You know, we're not rich, we're not famous, we're not powerful. We're not the, you know, Lord of all we survey. We're not the great sense enjoyment. Or, you know, we're just another face, right? So we might as well then try making that endeavor the other way. Right? Does that make some sense? So that's the thing, is we have to make endeavor. Ideas that should just be handed to us. That's the whole idea where you get, you know, the guru touches you on the head and then imbues you with all the different, you know, spiritual understandings, or, you know, you just drink some concoction and then you become wonderful or special or healthy or, you know, like that, right? You go out and you have this big thing of powdered stuff that tastes absolutely terrible. And then by drinking that, you're supposed to become wonderful, right? It sounds great, but it never works, right? So then that's the difficulty. Right? You notice something because of the complete difference, but after a while you become used to its disgusting taste and then you don't find the same benefit. You know? So that's the thing, is that there's going to be that those opposites, so then you might as well now make that endeavor for Krishna. Right? We've made it for the material energy. That didn't seem to work. Right? It didn't work for us, didn't work for anybody else that we knew. You know, everybody else that we know around that so-called is today famous and that, tomorrow they're not. Who's today wealthy, tomorrow they're not. You know, like that. You read in the paper, some guy loses $20 billion, you know, just in one, you know, flux of a few, you know, numbers on the stock exchange. That's all. You know, so it's always going on. So we have to remember that. Problem is that the soul, being Satchidananda, being Ananda by nature, happiness by nature, forgets unpleasantness. So the tendency is with the longer we're in Krishna consciousness, the tendency is to forget how bad is the material world. So then devotees make the mistake of going back out into it and considering it's not so bad. Like that. Because they're finessing what's actually going on. They're just looking at the externals. Right? Means in the devotee world, they go deeper into it because they've been there a while, they know the people, and so, you know, what's underlying is there, and it's a disturbance. But so when they go out in the karmi world, it's fresh, it's new, and they only see the externals. You just sit out there a little while, and sure enough, you know, it will, you know, be just as nasty or more than it was before you decided to become a devotee. Like that. Because the material energy doesn't change. It's not that because we don't like devotional service, now Maya changes her nature. No. You know, whether you're a devotee or not, water's still wet, fire's hot, sugar's sweet. So the material energy is exactly the same as it was before we became a devotee. It's the same when we are a devotee. It'll be the same after we go back to Godhead. It's not going to change. So like that, is there's no benefit to that, because unless you're such a big demon that Krishna personally kills you, then you don't get any benefit like that. Right? But can you be that big of a demon? Right? In this body, can you go and catch the nine planets, tie them up, and put them on your front steps? You step on them every time you walk into your house. Can you do that? So if you can't do that, then I don't think the Lord's going to bother to come and kill you. So that might not be a great program. Can you go and steal his consort? Right? And keep her tied up in your personal private pleasure garden. Right? Can you do that? No. Okay. Can you steal a city made of solid gold away from, you know, your brother? Right? You know, maybe you can steal his gold Rolex, but I mean, you know, I don't think the Lord would come and kill you over that one. You know? Like that. So, like this. So, could you go out and get the whole world to either be on your side against all the devotees, or they have then split and decided they'd rather assist the devotees and therefore cause a huge war? Right? Right? You know, it's got to be big enough, right? 640 million people at least got to go on that one. Like that. You know, can you pull that one together? No. You know, now it's a big calamity, you know, three soldiers got shot, you know, in a skirmish, you know, it's like that, you know, so it probably won't, you know, we didn't hear that the Lord came down and out of the clouds came this monster hand and then came down and squished, you know, one of these local dictators and stuff like that. It didn't bother. Modes of nature take them out. You know. Does that make some sense? So, you know, if you want to make that endeavor, it's good. The determination is good. The desire to find a working method is good, but might as well follow the tradition. We find so many others have followed it and have been successful. Like that. Is that okay?
Why demons killed by Krishna get different destinations?
Why do demons killed by Krishna get different destinations? Well, as far as I know, is they all get the same destination. Like they get Brahman realization. The only one demon that we hear of getting a different destination is Putana. Because she already had developed a parental rasa with Krishna. So she already had that rasa. But because of her material attachments, then she became inimical towards Krishna. So by being killed by Krishna, that removed that obstacle to her natural mood of motherhood towards Krishna. And so then that shone through. So already that Sukriti was there. And then it became colored. You know, it's just like you see sometimes the Lord's devotees come and then they take the form of, you know, people who are not much interested in Krishna consciousness. You know, like Tirumangai Alwar, then he was very much, you know, just he was just a robber. You know, he'd just go out and, you know, do his thing and maintain himself. Like that. But then by the Lord's grace, then, you know, it was time for him to become active in the Lord's pastimes. Then the Lord arranged, he was, you know, brought to consciousness by using his stealing to collect money to feed 1,000, you know, initiated Vaishnavas every day. He had to personally feed them a full meal. So doing that for a year, then he became purified enough, and the Lord was pleased enough with his service that the Lord then revealed himself. And then he took up devotional service. So these are just part of the pastimes that they do, so that it looks like they're like us. Right? Because if they just suddenly from, you know, out of the clouds then descended in this, you know, big halo of light and then landed on the ground and did everything perfect, then everyone would go, well, it's a nice example, it's great, you know, it's inspiring, but let's be real, you know, he dropped out of the clouds and we didn't. You know, of course, his example might be able to be used for, you know, someone's baby because they drop out of the clouds, but other than that, then for adults, it wouldn't work, right? Because reality is there, but we have bad qualities, we have, you know, attachments and all that. Therefore, we see that so many of the acharyas, for a short time even if it's just a short time, then they act as if they were coming from ordinary backgrounds, like that. And this way, then one gets inspired. You know, Jiva Goswami goes to Varanasi to study grammar and logic for 20 years. Right? He doesn't need it. It means all language and grammar come out of Goloka Vrindavan, and in there, the most expert at, you know, playing with the grammar or logic are the residents of Vrindavan, of that, the gopis, right? Because it's a political scene. So it's just, they'll be able to take words and turn them around and juggle them, and no one can do it better than them. But to just show that this is a method, right? Means he made that endeavor, therefore he became a scholar. Then they make that shows that, you know, we see, you know, Prabhupada or Bhaktivinoda Thakura, they get married, go through the whole family life. And like this, and then show how then they come to, you know, grips with Krishna consciousness, how they try to balance their family life with Krishna consciousness, how they, you know, what sacrifices they make, and what endeavors they make, and then we're able to appreciate. Otherwise, we just say, well, that's for someone else, not for us. So that's therefore they come like that. So that's the that would be the reason. But other than that, you see the demons, they just get Brahman, they get liberated into Brahman.
Merging Brahman and merging Krishna are the same.
Merging into Krishna's body, merging Brahman, same. Because it's all Brahman. You know, it's even the so those are two options. A third option is merging into the material energy. Like that, the Garbhodakarshana or the universal form, like that. That's what the yogis go into the body. The others go into the Brahman, and the Buddhists or the voidists, they go into the Garbhodak, the mud of the Garbhodak. So they all basically like that merge. And it means in any case, every time Krishna breathes in, everybody merges into his body. So that experience is there. Every time he breathes out and then glances on the material energy, then during that time of the Mahatattva, then all the living entities are there. They have their desire, but no way to fulfill it. So they're on the Brahman platform. So then they taste impersonalism. You know what it is, impersonal liberation. When they're in the Lord's body, they taste what it is merging with him. Like this. And then they come out and then they taste karma here. So all tastes are gained. But it's none of them have given us any satisfaction. So that's why we're here. We're looking for something more. Like that. Anything else here?
The story of Kalyaman. Kalyaman means acting as Krishna's enemy, went to attack him, but when he saw him, he was overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
Is there any contradiction? He's come as an enemy, in the sense.
Hmm. Kaliya, then he can appreciate. It's not that they can't appreciate. Just like even you have a good enemy, he's only really good if you appreciate. You know? A proper enemy is one who's, you know, noble, righteous, all these things. Then you can actually taste that taste. You know, because they'll do things properly. Right? Because if you're walking down the street, someone, you know, jumps out of the shadows and, you know, knocks you over the head, you can't really appreciate that. But if they walk up to you and challenge you and then say all kinds of things and you say all kinds of things back, then you like this, you can have a nice exchange. So appreciation of the enemy is a natural thing. It doesn't mean that you're not inimical towards what you appreciate, but it means you have to appreciate. It means someone who's smart appreciates the enemy. Someone who doesn't appreciate the enemy is actually foolish. Because enemy means they're, in our mind, they're it's unimportant, or it's something against what we're doing. But if we take them as unimportant or useless or stupid, then we're the ones that will lose. Like that. One can only win if one appreciates what's there. Like that. So knowing what's there, then you deal. Otherwise, if you deal less, oh, he's just a small timer. And then you just use a little endeavor. But he's not a small timer, then you'll be overwhelmed. You'll be defeated. So appreciation is not incompatible with this kind of rasa. Some appreciation is not there. You also find in one of the means, like when in this time, our the description in the Bhagavatam, when the Shringadeva manifests, then it created the rasa of wonder in Hiranyakashipu. It's just, what is this? You know, he couldn't figure it out. He knew the whole universe. The whole universe was under his control. 33 million demigods were in his control. So that means everything in the material world he knew. But here was something he didn't know what it was. So wonder was there. Another time, then Sanatana Goswami describes when Nrisimhadeva was so big. I guess here he came in a way that was big enough to be appreciated by Hiranyakashipu, but small enough to actually be engaged in armed combat. But in another time, he came so big, there's no question of
any match. And just with the, his fingernails, he just kind of like picked them up by the end of his fingernails and tossed them in the air. So that was something serious for Hiranyakashipu. That kind of experience had never been obtained before. So then on his way down, after going up for quite a ways, on his way down, then he actually folded his hands in respect of who had just tossed, who or whatever it was, just tossed him into the air. Because nobody does it. He's a mystic himself. He can fly in the air, he can change size, he can lift Kailash, he can do all kinds. This person just picked him up and threw him in the air. So it didn't matter what his potency was, it was just like, he was like just picking up a little flower and just throwing it in the air. So then he had respect there. So we see these things can happen. Someone like Shishupal, that's just low class. We see, by Dwarpara Yuga, the good qualities have kind of like been reduced. So the demons are a little bit more rough, rough and ready. But Ravana, he was sophisticated. He was refined. Right? He was a demon, he was refined. Sometimes the idea is if someone's refined, then they have to be good, and if they're unrefined, they're bad. So generally you'll see in our dramas, we generally project Ravana as very gross, rough, uncultured. But he was super refined. He got a hole in his chest poked by Airavata in his fight with Indra. So he made a special ornament that was like a tube that was encrusted with diamonds and gems on the inside, and stuck that in the hole. The hole went straight through. You could see all the way out. So you'd always get some nice light coming through and reflecting off all the jewels inside the hole. So he was refined. He wasn't gross, When Hanuman came to find where is Sita, then he came into Ravana's bedroom. It was so refined. I mean, the sheets, this, I mean, it was like, you couldn't get better. It was the best in the universe. Like that. But he figured that the lady with him was the most refined lady he had ever seen. But he figured that because Sita was the Lord's consort, she would never be in bed with a demon. Someone other than her husband. So even though she's the most refined lady he's met in the universe, then still, that's not Sita. So they can be refined. They can have qualities. So we see there, and then Hiranyakashipu, then you see he would do everything. He's sending his kid to the Gurukul. He's seeing how he's being trained. And, everything must be according to Shastra, trained by Brahmins, like that. Just that, it should be the materialistic side of things. And, of course, on the Upasanakanda side, then you just kind of like take out Vishnu and the demigods and put Hiranyakashipu there. But otherwise, everything else stayed in place. You worshipped him as the Shastra said. You offered prayers as the Shastra would say. So everything had to be perfectly Shastra. Obviously, Ravana would break sometimes the Shastra. Like that. Slightly. Duryodhana, the others, generally would follow, but when it came to their personal things, they didn't mind. They would take the lowest ends of it. They would take Artha or Kama Shastra. Like that. They wouldn't stay on Dharma Shastra necessarily. His occupation, yes, but personal life, no. The occupation, they perfectly managed the kingdom according to the religious scriptures, but their personal life was lower. And then in this age, Jagai Madai are an example here, so their qualities definitely are a bit less like that. Not so. Of course, you must hand it to Jagai. He wasn't a bad aim with the old wine bottle, So I'm saying he was, some quality was there. They could run real fast. They could run really fast. I mean, they gave Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur to run for the life, and here's, the original personality of Godhead and, Lord Brahma. So they must have been pretty, it had some good qualities. The amount of their, their repertoire of foul language also, it was quite impressive. You know, their ability to keep themselves, you know, inebriated 24 hours a day. Also, that takes some serious endeavor. So, qualities were there, but not exactly what you'd call scriptural, like that. They might have got the gold in the Olympics, maybe. But they would have been gotten on foreign substances in the body. Is that okay? Anything else? One more, okay.
In the story of
Mali
Maharaj, Krishna said that
I would say Baka and all these, they're Dhanavas, not Daityas. They're different dynasties. Daityas come down from Diti, her mother, and Dhanavas come from Dhanu. It's a different mother. So
are they related to Putana?
Well, that was in her previous life. In a previous life, then she was born in that family. Because here they don't go by soul, they go by birth. Like that. The Asura consideration of Varnashram and all that's by birth. So they'll consider that only. You know, if you're born in the family, then you have some standing. You're not, then you're outside. So that I know of, that would be different. You know, because otherwise, once a promise is made, Krishna doesn't break it. Unless it had a stipulation for only a certain amount of time, like Shishupal, he would tolerate 100 offenses against him, 100 insults, like that. And then after that, he would go. So then, while at the Rajasuya, while Shishupal was making insults, then he made 100 insults, and Krishna peacefully sat there. But as soon as he made the 101st, then with red eyes, he stood up, called the Sudarshan Chakra, and then cut his head off. So it was like, because his mother figured that he would never get past, you know, he'd run out of steam before 100 insults. You know, how long can you go on berating somebody, you know? You have to be really angry to maintain that mood. So anything before that, just Krishna being alive, or Krishna coming to their house, or Krishna being around, wasn't enough to get 100 insults in a row. But being worshipped at the Rajasuya in front of all the demigods and sages of the universe, that he is the supreme person in the universe, then that was enough, you know, anger to get 101 insults out of him. So then it worked. So Krishna got his work done, and his mother did her best to, you know, how you say, protect him.
I just remember, it's come to my mind, I think that story was in Banasura.
Oh, Banasura.
He promised he wouldn't kill.
He didn't kill Banasura.
Yeah, he wouldn't kill anymore because someone did.
Oh, Banasura.
He changed the next one.
Oh. But then you have to just stipulate how close the relatives are. Does that mean only
after?
Maybe they weren't. Anything else? Well,
Srimad Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Salavita Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Hidai Gaura Premanam.